Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very, very, very special episode of Uncanny Treks. Matt and Bob are finishing out their coverage of Star Trek the Animated Series, the Star Trek 73, the second Star Trek TV show. We are finishing it out, and we are finishing it out by covering the entire final season, all of season two. Matt, are we going to be here for 6 hours?
We might be, Bob. I don't know, man. I had to watch a whole lot of Star Trek animation yesterday. I felt like a kid in the 70s. I was not around in the 70s, but I'm just going to assume that's what they felt like.
But Matt, in a slight difference from a kid in the 70s, you were.
I'm not talking about Bob, but I'm going to tell you something. These episodes were crazy. They had lots and lots of gods, Bob. Lots of invisible gods talking to people on planets.
Yeah, original Star Trek always loves a story about God. But the animated series in its final season of 6 episodes really goes for it. Matt, do you want to run down for our good listeners what the 6 episodes we're talking about that make up the final season of Star Trek, the animated series?
Sure, Bob. So we have the Pirates of Orion, but it's Orion. That aired September 7th of 1974. And the following week, Bob, the episode Vim aired.
B-E-S. B-E-M. Vim.
Yeah, a week later, Bobby, got Practical Joker. Practical Joker aired September 24th. And you had Albatross, September 28th. Then episode 5, Bob, How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth.
Yep, from King Lear, baby, from King Lear.
Aired October 5th. And then the final episode of Star Trek the Animated Series, Counterclock Incident, aired October 12th, 1974.
The final episode of Star Trek on TV for, I think, 13 years?
Insane. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Matt, to start off with Pirates of Orion, you ever make a joke so bad that your bro collapses, as happens with Kirk and Spock at the beginning of this episode?
Yeah, it's McDonald's.
Ah, yeah, that'll get you. It'll get you in your Vulcan gut, especially if poor Spock's a vegetarian, man. He's not used to McDonald's.
Yeah, it's McDonald's.
Did you like the design of the freighter Huron in this? It's got like, the 4 nacelles and the huge cargo pod.
Because I'm loving it.
Oh, that's right.
You're not falling on the floor dead, Bob. Come on now. But I do like the design of the freighter Huron, Bob, with the 4 nacelles to carry the heavy load.
Indeed. Did you want to make your joke about ship customization too?
Yeah, you're going to really need those extra nacelles, Bob, trying to get the stuff pulled. Extra nacelles are where it's at. Do you think they alter their nacelles to make loud noises?
Yeah. Their names are Chris Pine and in Star Trek, the movie, right? With the Beastie Boys get running through space, blasting the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, he's probably got balls hanging from the back of the ship where the sensor dish is supposed to be.
Kirk puts Starship Nuts on the Enterprise, and Scotty really dislikes it because Scotty talks about the Enterprise as a lady.
Yeah, the Scotty respects the spaceship for what it is.
Speaking of respecting the spaceship, I was really surprised that they actually took the time to do a bridge design and a cargo interior for the Huron. It's cool. It's basically the Enterprise bridge design, but shrunk for 3 people. But still, just seeing that and seeing the cargo interior, which I'm sure is just a modified version of engineering from Enterprise, but still, both was cool.
Yeah, I have to shift my brain to think about this because in 1974, like, I'm thinking, why would they go through that much trouble to do that? And I mean, maybe they wanted to, like, produce books or RPG games or something like that that already has these things, but they weren't thinking about that back in 74. Not like today.
No.
Today, it's all, I understand exactly why they would do that. They're going to 3D print a model of it for somebody. They made money off of it somewhere. Back then, it was not the same.
And we meet the captain of the Huron, O'Shea, who, on the one hand, on the plus column, got a sick beard. On the minus column, my man has got the lowest of low energy delivery.
Yeah, I've got to make sure I don't act like this guy while I'm at work. I do dig that beard.
Yeah.
I dig that
beard.
Yeah,
it's good. It's a good beard. You just gotta make sure your delivery speed is in a better place.
And that's the beard that Boimler wishes he had. I mean, that's what Boimler is aspiring to be, that beard.
Oh, completely, completely. So, Matt, do you like the design for the Orion pirate ship? I mean, you got to admit it's at least an improvement in detail on the. It's just an energy dot in the original series episode Journey to Babel.
Yeah, to me, it gave me Klingon vibes at first, just that it looks like the crest. Yeah. So in our notes, I have pictures of what it looks like in Lower Decks versus what it looks like here in this animated episode. I like what Lower Decks did with it.
Yeah, they gave it a lot of good texture in the Lower Decks episode. Yeah, for sure. You're right, it looks a lot better. It looks a lot better. And did this change your appreciation of early Lower Decks Season 5, where they make a lot of, you know, Tindi and the Orions versus the Orions, who we see here in the animated series.
Yeah, when that episode first aired, I didn't quite get the joke all the way. I'd seen like stills of the Orions, but I didn't really know what it meant. And I think you had to actually explain it to me in our episode. But I did do some research, and I have read that there are three different reasons as to why they're blue instead of green, production wise, not canonical story wise. And all are not really that interesting, but let me tell you what they are.
So, okay, hit me.
Director Hal Sutherland, he was colorblind.
Oh, wow.
So that was one reason people think that may be why. One of the artists known as the green and purple guy, his name was Irv Kaplan. He didn't get it what color he used for anything, is what they said in some of the stories about him. So
nice.
He didn't care. So he just, whatever. And then the other reason in the TOS episode, Journey to Babel, there's an Orion who disguises himself as an Andorian, and they think that maybe somebody in Trek just wasn't thinking, or like, yeah, well, they're blue, see? And that.
Yeah, because I think it is worth saying, too, that in the original series, and I believe I'm correct in saying this, you see Orion's slave women.
Correct, they're green.
But you never see male Orions, except for, like you say, that one guy who's a spy in Journey to Babel, but I think he's always just surgically altered to look like an Andorian.
Correct.
So you don't actually know what they look like. And so, yeah, this episode, I believe, is not only the first on-screen appearance of the ship, but it's the first on-screen appearance of male Orions.
Right. That's correct. But, you know, the in-universe reason, though, is that it's just obvious. They just have different skin colors. Most people would.
Yeah, and it's that is something that it's Star Trek maybe should do more often, right? Is have skin color variation among alien species. Like, I do like when you have diverse Vulcans, right? Although you do have some really weird racist fans who get up in arms about that. I remember like Tuvok being black was at one point controversial. It's just disgusting.
That's awful.
Yeah. Matt, are you willing to die to preserve Southern neutrality?
Probably not.
I don't know. I might be willing to do it to preserve Northwestern neutrality, but you got to admire the Orion's commitment. They're not dying for their country. They're dying only specifically so it will continue to be perceived neutral. As neutral.
Gordon Bob, we want everything just to be okay.
Yeah. I did think it was cool that, and by cool, I mean silly and funny, but also kind of cool that the Orions use the same space force field instead of spacesuits that Starfleet use. Yeah.
It's really hard to draw spacesuits. I mean, come on, it took all the way to Discovery to get constant spacesuits. Consistent spacesuits. There's a scene in this episode that I just got to point out that I thought was just really bad.
Hit me.
That bomb scene.
Yeah, no good, man.
That was bad. That was so not intense. The exact opposite of it. Yeah, and one big thing too about this episode, and I think we'll wrap up with the character of the episode for this one, but what's the deal with McCoy being a dick about Spock's blood?
It's weird. I love McCoy, but some of McCoy's ribbing a Spock in our more politically correct times just does come across as deeply racist.
You green blood or whatever. Yeah, but he can't change his blood. What?
Yeah, dude, give him a transfusion.
What are you expecting out of the man?
We're giving you a full blood cleanse. Yeah. We're getting that red blood in you, son.
Yeah. I didn't understand that. So that's why Spock is my character of the week, because I feel bad for him.
You went with Spock. Since Spock was out of commission for much of this episode, getting berated about his blood, I went with Eriks, who filled in for Spock at the science officer spot. It was cool to see Eriks in that traditional Spock spot, looking down into the scanner. So episode 2 is Beam. Matt, do you remember seeing Pandorians like Commander Beam on Lower Decks?
I do. And their ability to separate themselves in multiple parts is both weird and so incredibly useful at the same time. When I think of superpowers, I think I would love to be able to fly. I would love invisibility. Those are the two big ones.
But have you ever considered detaching your leg?
Yeah, this is my third, Bob. This is my third. Bob, I could go to the bathroom at the same time while I'm watching TV, while I'm in the kitchen cutting up carrots.
Matt, I can't remember, was in the Legion of Substitute Heroes, when we were covering the Legion of Superheroes, in the Legion of Substitute Heroes, was Arm Fall Off Boy your favorite sub?
It was pretty cool. It's a neat power to have, I guess, just to have those limbs that you can just detach when you need them. But this specifically, though, I just like that you can be in three places at once.
It's useful. It's useful. It is interesting that Bim here, and I believe in the Lower Decks episode where a Pandorian shows up, are trainers, right? So he's always berating Kirk and Spock. Every planet is dangerous to the ignorant.
Yeah.
And given the fact that he's a teacher and he has a cartoonish Muppet design and he's got a weird speech pattern, all that really made me think that Bim might be Yoda before Yoda.
Yeah, he did give me those vibes. There was something just off about him. The berating piece really makes him sound like Yoda when he just comes off with a...
Yeah, it's like obviously the main influence on Yoda is like Kung Fu Masters and Shaw Brothers movies, but it is, yeah, you also makes you wonder if Lucas saw this episode.
Yeah, probably copied it. Pulled the old JMS.
Pulled the old JMS. Is having Bim, Scotty, and Kyle all at the transporter together, this is weird, but it's very funny just to see three guys at the transporter control. I don't know, that stands out to me for whatever reason.
Yeah, two is the most I've ever seen, Bob. So seeing three, it's why? Why are there three people operating one console? Seems like overkill. One should be standing behind the other one and pointing, at least.
And to your point about the surprising utility of Bim's powers, I was willing to get made fun of for this point, but it sounds like you're on board with it.
Oh,
but
hell yeah.
To me, him splitting his legs and arms as he's standing in water to go pick pockets for Spock, that's actually really cool.
It really is. This guy was a little too high intensity for both me and Kirk, Bob. I mean, he needed to take it down a notch. This dude's been holed up in his cabin for 6 weeks, not doing him anything. And then he's going to go and make himself transporter chief, and he wants to go on this very dangerous mission where the first thing you do is he takes a nosedive off a cliff. And then once he's under the water, guys, he just separates his body. It's normal and steals their stuff. Actually, he doesn't steal it. He replaces it with duds. The man came equipped with
duds. Like Batman, he's always prepared.
Yeah, this dude's high intensity. Oh, and he dresses like he's some rock star, Ziggy Stardust, Captain Marvel type.
That's funny. I also just want to shout out about this episode. Something is never ceases to be charming to me, and I think you see this in Johnny Quest and other things, but when you have lizards dressed as cavemen with furs and stone spears and torches, that just is always really charming to me.
Yeah, and Kirk refers to them as Aborigines.
Yeah, which is, not wrong, but unfortunate.
It really is. Really? Come on. But they wear fur loincloths, we get that, but they have really nice belt buckles and belts, it was just a staple of the look back then. They would always have...
Yeah.
They would always have really nice belts they went out of their way to make look good. You know why that's a specific thing to me, but I'm serious. Go back, any of those Johnny Quest cartoons, why they've got a nice belt.
It's the fashion of the time.
Yeah.
It's the fashion of the time.
And this is the thing, too, that bothered me. The entity in this show is so nice and sees them in the cage. And I'm going to let you leave. Just don't interfere. What does Kirk immediately do?
He interferes.
Beams down a security team with a bunch of phasers, and they go G.I. Joe on all the poor lizard people. And the lizard people are slinging their spears back at him against people with laser guns. Did you see the lizard people's faces when they just drop their spears and run off?
Yeah, I felt for the lizard people with the good fashion sense. Yeah, poor lizard people. Disturb them.
Oh, God. And then Kirk's like, for real this time, we'll leave.
Well, Matt, the lesson is God is forgiving.
I guess so, Bob. We're all God's children, apparently, because that's the theme for all these episodes.
Indeed.
We are children of something. What? I can't say it on TV.
Children of the great creator and parent to us all. Matt, who was your character of the episode for Bim?
Well, Bob, it's going to be Bim.
Shocking.
Yeah, that character is interesting. I could have watched that character a lot more.
There's potential there. I actually don't want Lower Decks to waste its last two episodes on Bim, but like a return to another Pandorian in a future season of Lower Decks that won't happen could be fun. I'll give it to Spock. I love it. You're very right that there's Star Trek has always had this, oh, we don't need God attitude. But in the animated series, it's maybe a little bit more softened because it's a kid's show and it becomes more nebulously Christian, right?
Right.
Like you're saying. But as a counterpoint, though, Spock in the animated series, my man is willing to be a pagan at the drop of a hat, Matt. You think back to him doing magic circles and in performing magic spells in the episode with the devil in season one. And here he's willing to make sacrifices and offerings to the entity.
Bob, I mean, the kids don't want to be Spock. He look at it.
Oh, I think they do, man. I mean,
look at his ears, man. He looks weird. He's all logical and smart. Nobody wants to see that.
You know that the original idea was to have Kid Spock and his pet join the crew. That was the original.
Yeah, his pet was awesome, Bob. That was one of my favorite characters.
We're going to get to that in our retrospective, man. We're going to get to that. I also did enjoy how much Spock trolled Kirk and made fun of him while they were captive in this. Yeah. It was good. So an episode I enjoyed surprisingly a lot was number 3, Practical Joker. I forgot the Romulans were in this one, which was funny. And then I did want to ask, were you surprised? We see Kirk having this huge spread that he's eating with Spock, McCoy, Uhura, Sulu, and Scotty.
Yeah, it reminds me of our favorite dinner host, Captain Pike, Bob.
Yeah, I didn't think about that at all, right? But you're exactly right. Now it's after Strange New Worlds, and he's falling in the tradition of Pike. But you know, maybe this informs Strange New Worlds, its choices.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Spock and Uhura are used to this.
Kirk didn't used to do this, and you know Pike used to lay a pretty good table, Cap.
This is why we liked him more than you.
Oh, God. I didn't really think about that. That is the funny thing about the prequelists of Strange New Worlds is, man, you would so much prefer working for Pike than Kirk.
Oh, look at Spock and Uhura, all the great things they've been able to do alone. And look how they treat Uhura now.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. That gets raw in a couple of these episodes. Yeah, man. So I also did want to, as long as we're being woke about it, I did want to say, I do sense a little bit of humanoid chauvinism that Kirk only invites the human or human, part human members of the senior officer staff to his table to dine. And so they don't eat with Eriks or Imres. And then immediately both Scotty and Kirk assume that either Eriks or Imres is the practical jokester.
Yeah, see, when they first bring them up, I just thought maybe they weren't eating, they just don't eat human food, so that's why they're not with them. Okay, that's cool.
Oh, I know. I don't know about Eriks, but I know my cat eats human food, man.
That's the excuse they're going for, whatever, okay?
Yeah,
but then
they
specifically show them eating macaroni and cheese and peas on their little tray, so there's no excuse.
Yeah.
Specious.
Oh, man. It is very specious. This is also the origin of the immortal meme of Kirk walking around with a sign on his back that says Kirk is a jerk.
Between this and Spock getting the raccoon eyes from looking in the microscope that's square-shaped.
That's funny.
Yeah. This really is a great episode, Bob, to teach children about bullying, and they had a message here.
Cue the NBC Peacock logo, the more you know. Matt, were you excited by the first appearance of the holodeck?
Well, Bob, I mean, they call it the rec room. And I remember as kids, I was talking about this because it was, where did the holodeck come from? Why don't they have that?
I had a weird, most Star Trek reference books didn't cover the animated series, but I think I had a weird one called the Star Trek Concordance, which was just a very strange book. And it mentioned that it came in this episode, I believe.
That is correct. Yes, I do remember that. It was for the more dedicated fan.
Yeah, I think I found it like on Remainder Cell at the Walden Books. And we poured over that 30th anniversary magazine I had, and we poured over the Star Trek Encyclopedia, which you had, and the Star Trek Chronology, which I had.
Right. So, Bob, I had never seen this actual animated episode, but I knew the holodeck didn't debut in TNG because of all that stuff you just talked about. But I'm impressed how TNG took the concept and made it the evolution into live action is just what you see here. Even down to the scene is in the woods, and then the scene you see in Encounter at Farpoint is Data in the woods.
Yeah, right. And I guess that's kind of the basic thing you do when you're trying to demonstrate, like, oh, it can create environments. But yeah, you're right. It's very similar beats.
Right. So I thought that was impressive the way they did that, just made that continuity.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. I also just thought about this episode. It was interesting that usually we really get beat down in this final season with this pattern. Kirk and Spock need rescuing.
Yeah.
Or Kirk or Spock. You sometimes Spock, sometimes Kirk and Spock. Here it was interesting that it was McCoy, Sulu, and Uhura that needed rescuing, which gave it, you know, that gave it a welcome little bit of variation to the stories, right?
I guess maybe their voice actors were.
We got to give them some work. So who was your character of the episode, Matt?
I'm going to give it to the ship's computer, Bob.
Wow. Wow. So you think that's a character, huh?
Yeah, I'm just going to call it that. And I was just, does it make you fear AI even more, Bob?
I mean, I fear AI, but I fear AI for different reasons than most people fear AI. Does that make sense?
I just don't want AI playing pranks on me.
Oh, yeah. I don't fear AI doing that. I fear AI making my job and my quality of life worse. I don't fear it killing me or gaining sentience.
Gotcha.
Well, Matt, my character of the episode is going to be Mares. This is the origin that I like to use for a meme of like her pointing. And I've used that for several anti-Maquis memes in the past. I really like that as a meme template. So I'm happy for this episode for generating my favorite Imres meme.
Giving up for Imres. All right, Bob. Episode 4, Albatross.
Yeah, man. So the design on the Dreamian ship, that's wild. I can't really even describe it.
To me, at first, I thought it was a little bit of Bucky O'Hare. You remember Bucky O'Hare, Bob?
Yeah, I do remember Bucky O'Hare.
Bucky O'Hare had an orange ship, and it had sort of that window thing you see on the cover there, but it's a lot more circular, a Millennium Falcon type thing.
Not to get political with this, but is this an episode as an allegory where Dr. McCoy is Dr. Fauci, and RFK Jr. is the aliens, and he's about to bring Dr. Fauci to justice? Is that what's about to happen?
Oh, yeah, Bob. Dr. Fauci. Get Mr. Brad Pitt, feel good story, Dr. Fauci guy. Remember that, Bob? Remember when Dr. Fauci wanted Brad Pitt to play him on TV?
I actually don't. That doesn't surprise me, but I don't remember.
Remember when it was a cute story?
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I didn't really pay much attention to Fauci back during the pandemic. So Matt, to go off politics, is this the origin of Kirk's hand over his mouth as a meme, or is this a reuse that they've had in other episodes?
This is the actual origin of the meme.
Whoa.
I looked it up just for you.
That's wild. Thank you for looking that up, man. I appreciate you doing the research. I did just want to note that it is funny that a lot of these season 2 episodes, they end with people laughing.
Yeah, that's because they want to make sure the kids go home happy and smiling. Like,
they worked out in the end.
Everything's
good. Watch it next week.
And then we want to do character of the episode. I mean, there's just not much to say about Albatross. So.
There's really not. That's the issue, too, with this one, Bob. Albatross was probably the most boring episode of these 6 in season 2.
That's probably fair.
I mean, it just was not a great episode. And my character of the episode, Bob, just going to go with Green Uhura. Because it was weird to see a green Uhura.
I like that. I also really liked Scotty being blue. Uhura being green and Scotty being blue were great fun. So I'm going with blue Scotty. I also enjoyed he meets the plague survivor Coltai, and he's just utterly horrified to see Coltai. And I like to imagine that that's possibly because Coltai is also voiced by Jimmy Doohan. So he's seeing himself and he doesn't like it.
Yeah, Jimmy Doohan's just playing around, man. Episode 5, he got a lot better.
What's the title of episode 5?
How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth.
Yeah. So what did we start with?
Well, it starts off, Bob, with a really stupid-looking crew. A Hall of Doom with garland on it, and then wings. But then it turned into a serpent, and I was okay with that. So you can already tell this episode's really, really trippy.
Yeah, I agree with you that the probe was strange, but the trippy winged serpent, that was the stuff, man. That was
right.
The stuff.
I mean, the psychedelic, they were on shrooms for this one.
Yeah. Man, I wish I had tripped before watching it. This is the source to me of two great memes. One is the feathered serpent, Quetzalcoatl. Seeing him is always a great meme template. And then also you get in this one, like Kirk last episode covering his hand shocked, you get Spock covering his, you know, using his hand to cover his mouth shocked. And I always like to see Spock in that pose too.
So Bob, at the beginning of this episode, there's this character they keep zoning in on. And I had no clue who he was. And they took a little while to get into it. And then finally, you could tell me who this character is.
Yeah. So his name is Dawson Walking Bear. He's of the Comanche people. And he is, I'm pretty sure, unless I'm forgetting something, and I don't think I am, he's the first indigenous Starfleet character. There have been indigenous characters in the original series, but I don't think any of them had been in Starfleet.
Yeah. This guy gets a speaking part. I'm okay, cool. This is a new character. And he explains what's going on with everything. And then Spock confirms Walking Bear's actual knowledge for Kirk and then does some indigenous explaining that I didn't care for. Spock's a jerk in this show.
Yeah, man. They don't get Spock very well in this series sometimes. I don't think I was as bothered by the indigenous splaining, but now that you say that, I should rewatch it and see if I notice it now. But in an earlier episode when we were covering season one, we were talking about the episode The Slaver Weapon. You thought Spock was being really condescending to Uhura, and I didn't. But now I'm wondering if I was wrong, because in this episode, Spock is just awful to Uhura. It makes me so angry. What was going on? Why did they write it that way?
Yeah, he's like, return to your duties. It just flat out tells her that. And then I detect a little bit of sexism in Spock's human half here, Bob. It bothers me.
Yeah, it is worrisome, man. It is worrisome.
And when they get down on the planet, Bob, there's these serpent things, and they're turning them around. This is from Tomb Raider. Like, these are the puzzles they use in all those video games. Wow, this is the origin of those.
You know, we're inventing point-and-click adventure on Saturday morning television in the 70s.
Yeah, apparently, kids are probably excited about that back then.
Check it out, Kirk. There's shining lights on mirrors and stuff, and it took like 5 minutes in the episode for them to get it right.
But like, if you play a video game, it would take you 5 minutes too, but you're doing it yourself. But for kids in the 70s, they were okay with that.
Well, Matt, the other week we talked about an episode from the end of the animated series, season one, although I've already forgotten the title, where humans are trapped in a zoo, I believe held by giant telepathic slugs. And you really liked the idea of living in a zoo. Yeah. And Scotty heard you, and he's going hard at you this week, Matt. He's really upset about your desire to live in a zoo and Quetzalcoatl's plan to put you in a zoo.
Yeah, he says flat out, he'd never be happy putting creatures in his wee cages. Said wee cages.
He's very funny.
Yeah, but there's some simulation theory matrixy VR stuff going on here. I don't know what someone read right before this episode, but whatever was stuck with them had to be.
And remember, kids, whenever somebody brings up simulation theory, probably what they just want you to say is, oh, nobody's real, so that means I can work you at your job as hard as you want. That's the only reason people bully.
You said that multiple times in this podcast, Bob, and it's true.
I'm worried that some of the listeners might not have heard me say it. This is my NBC moment. Peacock sails across the screen. The more you know, Matt. The more you know. You did make a movie connection here that is absolutely right on.
Yeah. So speaking of a simulation here, the serpent goes on and on with his story and will not shut up. And I kept having to hear his voice. And I'm thinking, I've heard this voice before. That's the Wizard of Oz, Bob. Kirk makes an astute thing about teaching that I wanted to make clear that I don't know if I necessarily agree with. But if children are made totally dependent upon their teachers, they'll never be anything but children.
Ah, that's sad, Matt. We want them to be more than children.
We do, Bob. We want them to grow. Very good, Kirk. Their plan, Bob, to break out of this zoo is to just pull a bunch of tubes out of their cages.
That seems like the way to go.
They're hoping for the best, man. They're hoping for the best. They don't have a clue what they're doing. We have this great line, Bob, from the serpent, but your violence surpasses even that of the power cat.
Hey, man, the power cat's pretty dangerous, and if the humans are worse than that, that's intense, bro.
Never thought I'd pull those words together. It's not quite a god, though, right, Bob?
No, I like the Kirk line that Quetzalcoatl is not quite a god, just an old lonely being who wants to help others, which is a sweet thought. And then we have Spock even though he's a total prick to Uhura and apparently Walking Bear this episode, Spock says Vulcan was visited by such alien beings, but they left much wiser.
Well, Bob, character of the episode we agree on this one. I'm giving it to Walking Bear. I kind of went in with low expectations. I don't know what they're doing with this character, but came out surprised.
I liked Walking Bear, too. I'd love to see him and Eric's kind of get a similar but contrasting friendship you often get between people at the front of the ship, Sulu and Chekov, or Detmer and Awarshika.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. So episode 6, Matt's the counterclock incident. I have to say, we talked about these books earlier, but we had the Star Trek Encyclopedia and the Star Trek Chronology. We didn't have actual Star Trek episodes as kids. We had the reference books. And so they talk about Captain Robert April in those, especially I think in the Encyclopedia, as the first captain of the Enterprise, which always made me excited to know more about him. And so when I was a kid, knowing that this episode existed always really interested me.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Bob, we're introduced to his wife, Dr. Sarah April.
Indeed.
Apparently was the first doctor on a warp-capable vessel. Is that my understanding?
Yeah. Although that would have to actually not be true. But she and Captain April are the first captain and the first medical officer of the Enterprise, at least.
Nice.
Yeah.
So do we ever see, we've never seen a live action version of her?
Yeah, I don't think so. We do see a live action Bob April in Strange New Worlds, right? He's an admiral and right. promoted, played by a black dude. And then he's good. I'd like to see more of him. Did we see Bob April in the JJ movies? I don't think so. I think we just saw Pike.
We tried to just eliminate those from my brain.
No, that's the right thing to do.
I can't pretend like they're not real.
Yeah, so I think Strange New Worlds is the first time we've seen a live action Bob April. And yeah, we still need to see a live action Sarah April. Maybe she'll show up on Strange New Worlds at some point. And I did just want to make, this is sort of a joke and sort of not a joke, Matt. Another reason Star Trek is a utopian future, mandatory retirement at age 75. As I look at the current American political class, I really feel the utopianness of that as a law.
I like that, Bob. People need to just chill out after a certain age.
Spend some time with your grandkids. Spend some time with your hobbies. Enjoy the money you've accumulated. Why are you still doing it? Speaking of, we've been woke this episode. We're going to feel a little more woke. Does it bother you how condescending everybody is to Sarah April? They don't call her doctor, and both Spock and her husband are just like, oh, God, it's gross.
Sounds like how they treated Jill Biden.
Yeah, but the difference being that Sarah April's a real doctor. Yeah, I mean, she's a fake character, but she's a real doctor. I could say this as somebody who almost but then failed to get a doctorate in English. Humanities doctors, I mean, it takes humanities degrees, education degrees at the doctorate level. They take work. They're worthy of respect. But you're not a real doctor. Shut up. So, Matt, I did like that it was Warp 36. Warp 36. Really made me laugh.
Let's just go on to Warp 36. No big deal.
Yeah.
Well, they won't turn into salamanders or anything.
Well, no. See, the warp scale from the original series to Next Gen. Yeah. No. Even before that, they... In Next Gen, they basically treat, I don't know if they ever say this on screen, but they treat warp 10 as an unbreachable barrier. And so no warp scales from Next Gen on or above warp 10. But in the original series and in the animated series and in the novels and such, occasionally people would just say other high warp numbers. I think sometimes the Enterprise is cruising at warp 11 and warp 12. And so it's a different scale. They recalibrated the scale.
Makes sense. They didn't have to do it like Dr. Tiana did, though.
Yeah, they didn't have to go through a pain surgery to do it. And I also think the decimal thing was a Next-Gen thing. Since in the original series, you would just say a higher number. But in Next-Gen DS9 Voyager, you'd say warp 9.2 or whatever.
That makes a lot more sense. It's like they switched to metric or something.
Did you instantly think of Twin Peaks when we got the reverse speech?
Oh, hell yeah. You can't have that without Twin Peaks. An app on my phone that does it for me, and I freak kids out with it.
That's cute. I would just sort of say philosophically about this episode, on the one hand, it's about wanting more life, and I think wanting more life is good. But on the other hand, I also appreciate Captain April being a Nietzschean and just being, nope, I'm not doing it again. I did it right the first time. Matt, who is your character of the episode for Counterclock?
I'm going to give it to Baby Eric's. There's just something about having all them arms and them sucking his thumbs.
I'm glad you did that, because I didn't really think to notice Baby Eric's. I should have. That sounds really funny if you mention it. To me, I'm going to give it to Dr. April. Unlike Jill Biden, put some respect to Sarah April's name. Call her doctor.
Yeah. All right, Bob. So there we have it. We have covered all of Star Trek animation. So I haven't watched Prodigy Season 2.
And you shouldn't. Don't do it.
So I'm just going to leave that one untapped.
Matt, before we let you loose from your animated purgatory of trippy animation, we've got questions. So what was your favorite episode of these season 2 episodes?
Well, Bob, my favorite episode of season 2, I'm going to give it to Bim.
Wow, that's shocking. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, really, I don't know. The character of Bim was hilarious to me. And I just like the idea of the scene alone of him stealing their stuff is just awesome. That made the episode.
For me, I've thought I would say the Counterclock incident or Pirates of Orion, but I'm actually going to say Practical Joker. I was really surprised how much I liked Practical Joker of these few.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be silly. I mean, it was silly, but still, I thought it was going to be too silly for Trek, but it was still good.
It fleshed the ship's settings out in a cool way. It fleshed the crew out in a cool way.
Yeah.
I just had a little bit of action with the Romulans, which is nice.
It was a good episode.
What was your favorite episode overall in the animated series?
I said that my favorite first season episode was Lorelei's Signal, and I'm still going to go with that for overall.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm tempted to say the Survivor because of childhood nostalgia. I think I said that last time.
Right.
I had the novelization of that when we were kids, but I'm actually going to go with Time Trap. Time Trap is good. And yeah, I tried to comic that. I just don't like it.
Well, thank you for trying, Bob. I appreciate it.
I tried because you said so. I tried.
Just like that doctorate, you gave it a good try.
I did. Well, I don't know if it was, in either case, I don't know if it was a good try, Matt.
That's okay. In my eyes, Bob, it was good.
Matt, do you want to, maybe we should just each run down our own character of the episode tallies just to have a quick little retrospective of who all we saw in our 2-year journey through Star Trek, the animated series.
Yeah, I always love doing this because it's funny. Some of the characters that stick out, like
you don't realize you would have rewarded them so often.
Yeah. Yeah, especially after these later episodes. But man, I apparently liked McCoy a lot in the animated series. I liked him 4 different times. He was my favorite character.
Yeah, and I think overall these are 22 episodes, right?
Right.
So 4 out of 22.
Yeah. And then I chose Ichaya, who was Spock's pet, which we mentioned a little bit earlier in the episode. For some reason, it stuck with me.
Wanted him to join the cast, Matt.
I needed to be on the show. Would have made it for fun. If you're going to go through the trouble of having an animated thing because you can't do some of the things you want to do live action, this would be one of them, having a really cool pet. Sure. I chose Scotty twice, but really, I mean, Scotty voiced so many characters. He could have been like every character if he wanted to. Nurse Chapel, probably because I was on a Strange New Worlds kick, and so anything with Nurse Chapel's awesome.
No, that's fair.
I chose the giant Tribble from More Tribbles, More Troubles. I chose Spock on 2 occasions. And then our character I really do remember, the Paul Heyman as a Puritan. And that's where they go back to Salem.
And I love your description of him. It was with some of these, I put in little notes in case you forgot who they were. But that one I knew you wouldn't need any help remembering.
I mean, it literally is him. All right? I almost want to like send it to him and be like, hey, look, dude, you were in Star Trek. Just in case you probably know nothing about it. All right, Harry Mudbog. I have such vivid memories of that anniversary game.
The 25th anniversary game, I think. Yeah.
And I chose the Lilliputians because if you're reading this right now, you can tell the amount of shrooms that were done to make these episodes. Lilliputians were my favorite character.
Matt likes his Gulliver's Travels comes to Star Trek.
Yeah, when they were making these in the 70s, they must have been high as kites. Kirk's webbed hand, that's a great character. I chose Uhura on 2 occasions. I chose Laura, the horny hunter, in that episode where they all kind of teamed up as the best of the best in having a heist.
Yeah, the season 1 finale of a sort.
Yeah, then I chose Ben, the splitting guy, of course. Enterprise computer, walking bear, and then baby Eric's.
I like that I put in a note for Ben, like you were going to have trouble remembering him. Then it turns out that was your favorite episode. So I feel totally redundant for having done that.
Yeah, season 2, favorite episode's Ben. Ben stuck with me.
So my big guy was Eric's. I liked him 3 times. Big fan of that 3-legged, 3-armed Edosian with a Jimmy Doohan voice. I went with Alik Oom, who's the bird historian from the time travel episode in season 1, because I really like the Aurelian design. I went with Spock possessed by a cloud in an early episode. I went with regular Spock. I went with Uhura. I went with the Glomer, which is a Tribble predator. I went with Imres twice. I went with Agmar, who's a plant person. From the Devil episode with Paul Heyman as a Puritan, I went with the Devil himself, Lucian. I went with Sulu. I went with Chapel. I don't think that was the same episode you went with Chapel, though. Although, man, I think Majel Barrett was really around a lot in season 1 and not a lot in season 2.
Yeah, I didn't see her at all. But I mean, she was maybe.
Although, was she still doing the ship's computer in Practical Joke?
I thought that was a dude.
Because I think in season 1 it was her, but I don't remember if it was her doing it in season 2 or not. Right. Yeah. From the Time Trap episode, I went with an Orion girl named, who was basically Uhura or Nichelle Nichols voicing an Orion, which I thought was really cool. I went with McCoy twice. I went with the Kzinti telepath because I really liked the nameless Kzinti telepath. From that season 1 finale, you went with the horny hunter. I went with the cowardly caterpillar. I went with Scotty once, I went with Walking Bear, and I went with Dr. April.
Man, a lot of like different characters. It's so crazy how many different things we have going on there just for those, that list.
Everything.
Yeah, and I really enjoy doing this with you, man. I think in some ways, I wish we'd done it a little earlier because it really enriches watching Lower Decks because so many of the designs and little Easter eggs in Lower Decks are obviously from this show, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And as someone who I used to think this animated series was garbage and just not a thing that needed to be watched to really enjoy Trek, with all the stuff from Lower Decks, like you just said, all those connections, and then they're really making this part of all the continuity, people should watch it.
A lot of it is trash, but if you can give yourself over to it, there's some real fun to be had with it, right?
There's definitely good stuff, yeah. It's not a waste of your time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we, listeners, we also really enjoyed, we had to do this out of necessity to clump these two seasons together because of Lower Decks ending. We wanted to just keep doing Lower Decks versus the animated series, right? But I think we are going to explore with doing some older animated stuff, not necessarily this old, but some older animated stuff and do, you know, do episodes in like maybe five episode chunks, things like that. So if there's anything you would like to see Matt and I cover, let us know. God, I guess I should get back on X, the everything app, so people can't. But yeah, let us know. We're thinking about other things to cover in the future as Star Trek seems to be winding down for the time being, at least. Well, Matt, it's a fun journey. I'm looking forward to doing the last of Lower Decks with you. Join us for our last three Lower Decks episodes. Listeners, we'll probably talk about the animated series some on those as well, and keep watching for more Uncanny Treks.
Thanks for listening.